Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Please turn off all cell phones. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2021. The time is 9 o'clock. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Wilson is on other state business and will be joining us shortly. Good morning, everybody. Today's teleconference operator is Marissa Truitt. Today's Finance Committee Secretary is Laura Hosey. Mr. Bailey is an intern to Senator Wilikowski, is going to be managing the slides. Today's agenda is one item, is Alaska Energy Authority to provide update on assets, projects, grants, and loans. Mr. Thayer is joining us via video teleconference, Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority. So with that, any other business before we get started and turn it over to Mr. Thayer? Seeing none, Mr. Thayer, if you'd please start your presentation and we'll take a look here at each slide at the end to see if look for questions. And we got a pretty thick slide deck here, but you're a veteran and you know how to whip this through these slides for this committee. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer and I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. The Alaska Energy Authority was created 45 years ago by the legislature as a public corporation, and the simple mission is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska, whether that is in urban Alaska or whether that be in rural Alaska. I wasn't sure about the slide deck.
Okay. Pardon? We're good. We're fine. Slide two, we're on to the next slide three.
Okay. What we do is we have Railbelt Energy. AEA owns the Bradley Hydro Project, which is the largest hydro project in Alaska. We also own two interties, one on the Kenai Peninsula and one from Willow to Healy. We also do the power cost equalization in support of rural Alaska. The cost of that program, which we have a little bit later, is about $29 million. We have Rural Energy, which is the construction of bulk fuel tanks as well as powerhouses. And then we have what we call circuit riders that travel throughout rural Alaska providing emergency response and providing training for about 200 communities in rural Alaska. We have the Renewable Energy Project, which we do have pending before the legislature, round 13 of some projects that have been identified in the latest round for the Renewable Energy Fund. That we're not asking for new money, we're just asking for a reappropriation of some existing REF funding that came in under or some projects were canceled. We do grants and loans, obviously more loans than grants these days, and we do our loans through the Power Project Fund. And then we do energy planning, working not only with local communities, but local businesses here. One of our biggest ones is the energy planning, and we'll talk about a little bit later in the slide deck, is we partner with the Alaska Cargo and Cold Storage in receiving a $21 million grant through the build grant federally for energy efficiency and renewables for that building. On the next slide, we have our projects. It's just completely across the state, our breadth of operation of where we're at. We have the PCE training. Obviously, we have bulk and powerhouses we've already discussed. We also have the village energy VEEP, wind, solar, hydro, biomass, heat pumps, you name it. We have active projects across the state in over 300 communities currently.
Mr. Thayer?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman has a question.
Yes, I have questions on page three. You're going a little bit fast here.
I'm sorry.
The weatherization program, where does that fall under the energy planning, and how much are you planning to spend, if any, on that program to reduce energy costs for real Alaskans?
Are you talking about the weatherization program?
That's what I was referring to, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the weatherization program for homes is actually handled through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. What we do is we work with the local communities in dealing with the powerhouses. And one of the projects we're working on is looking at the waste heat. That's an ongoing issue with the Regulatory Commission, but we're working with communities to resolve that. But as far as weatherization of individual homes, that is not under our under AEA.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Thayer, just one quick question from before I do. Senator Wilson is here, has just joined us. Your circuit riders, are they direct employees?
Are they? Mr. Chair, yes, they are. They are employees of AEA and the state. We do receive a good bit of their funding is through a partnership with the Denali Commission. And so we do have federal receipt authority in there for the majority of their salaries. And we currently have four circuit riders that work in rural Alaska.
Thank you. Please continue.
I was on slide five, and it was just kind of, again, the Bradley Lake Hydro Project, the West Fork Battle Creek diversion, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it's a diversion that we were able to do for $47 million working with the utilities to divert additional water into Bradley, which would increase the energy of Bradley. The SSQ line, which was a line from Sedotnas to Sterling to Quartz Creek that was recently purchased by AEA in a partnership with utilities. Again, we have the Alaska Intertie from Willow to Healy, with power cost equalization, and then again with the power, with our rural power system, bulk fuel, alternative energy, renewable energy, and our power project fund. In regards to our owned assets, the Bradley Lake Hydro Project, which is south of Homer, benefits over 500,000 ratepayers from Chugach to City of Seward. Golden Valley Electric in Fairbanks receives almost 17% of the power from Bradley. In addition to the Homer Electric in Matanuska. We produce about 10% of the electricity on the rail belt at 4.5 cents a kilowatt. And if you compare that to natural gas, it's about 9 cents a kilowatt, so about half the price of natural gas, which provides about a $20 million annual savings to the ratepayers using hydro as opposed to natural gas. One of our success stories this last summer was the completion of the West Fork Upper Battle Creek diversion. We diverted water from Battle Creek into the dam itself or into Bradley. It was completed in July of 2020, and it included during that construction, it includes 3 miles of road, concrete and diversion dams and a 5-foot diameter pipeline. If you look in the lower picture on the lower left-hand corner, that road did not exist. That road was pioneered, and that pipe that you see is 62 inches height, and it was fused together for over 3 miles. We had one of the largest fusing machines in the world at the site this summer, and it became operational. And we hope to be able to house at least 5,000 more homes using hydropower. And our initial from July until we shut it down this winter because of water flow in the winter, it was exceeding all expectations. So once we have a full year under our belt, we might find that was an extremely well-intended investment.
Mr. Thayer?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what slide are you on now? Because are you on slide 8?
Yes, I was on slide 8.
Okay, because now people can see the pipeline that you're talking about. Slide 8.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. And it is orange in color on purpose when it was ordered. So that was done to help establish it. That pipe is now buried along the roadbed there that was created. And due to the amount of water flow, it's held down by concrete anchors. On slide 9 is the SSQ transmission line. This is a 39-mile line. It's 115 kV transmission line that delivers power. And it was really, we purchased it from Homer Electric. It was a stranded asset in the sense that it did not serve Homer. It primarily served the five northern utilities. And during the Swan Lake fire, when the line was down, it was down for 4 months, which cost the utilities approximately $12 million in additional cost for that, because that Bradley power was not flowing. In alignment with required project work, we purchased that line with utilities, and we wanted better cost alignment. It's hopefully we want to upgrade it to increase the reliability of it and decrease line losses. At some points in this line, in Kenai Peninsula, we lose up to 40% of line loss, especially when we're transmitting all the way to Fairbanks. And this also ended a lawsuit among the utilities, which costing the ratepayers $4 to $5 million, and that completely abolished that. And then we also have scheduled within hopefully 6 months to look at design of upgrading that line with 24 to 36 month estimate to finalize construction. And a construction of upgrading that line is about $70 million. And that's something we're working with utilities on. And we're looking for ways to do it, which hopefully is good news to the legislature in a way that doesn't raise the cost to the ratepayer and does not burden the state treasury. So we're working towards that goal, and you'll be hearing more about that, hopefully, as we continue to meet with utilities.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
On slide 9, Senator
Hoffman has a question, and I have a follow-up on this intertie transmission line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $12 million additional costs when the power line was down, how much did that increase the kilowatt hour, price per kilowatt hour? Did it go up to 10 cents?
Senator, or through the chair, Senator, I can get you that number. Each one of the utilities have billed it differently depending on the rate structure of what they were expecting from Bradley. One of the utilities that were affected the most by it was Golden Valley. But I can get you the individual numbers per utility. And it's just what they have reported to us of what those numbers were and what the increased cost were.
The dollars are important, but it's good to see the comparison for us at this table to get an idea of what costs were risen to that inconvenienced the people in that service this area. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Hoffman. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thayer, this line that was originally owned by Homer Electric during the time that it was down, is this line reimbursable by the feds in terms of their cost of their damage to this line, and will they be reimbursed if so, or will ADA be reimbursed since they own it now?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that is currently being worked through with FEMA, whether it will be reimbursed, but there are provisions in the purchasing of the line of how any reimbursement would be distributed among the parties, because Homer did fix the line. They did bring it back on service, and so they need to be reimbursed for those expenses. If there are other expenses that the utilities, since ownership has done to it, that is related to the fire, then there's provisions to distribute that those fundings. But right now, we have not been reimbursed by the federal government. And at this point, I don't know if we will.
Follow up.
And I have just a question here, because my understanding was that the joint other utilities wanted to provide crews and access to repair that line sooner than the four-month timeline, and that Homer Electric refused them access to that. So part of this lawsuit, I guess that was settled. Who is going to maintain the line? Because I know ADA doesn't have crews. Is it going to be the Homer Electric still going to maintain the repairs of this line, the maintenance, or is that going to be worked out through the utilities now in a better MOU or MOA type of situation?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. Actually, the lawsuit revolved around an antitrust issue. There was no lawsuits when the line was actually down. However, you are correct. It was a Homer line, and Homer was the one to provide access or to bring it back on. That was a point of consternation with utilities. In this new agreement with AEA's ownership of the line, Right now, we do have a contract with Homer Electric to maintain that line, but if for some reason they are unable to meet those obligations, we can ask, and any one of the five other utility, or any other utility, we can ask, and they can go in and bring that line back up, whether it be Chugach Electric, MEA, or even Golden Valley. So that was written into the agreement that it's not just held by Homer Electric, but all the utilities have that ability.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Please continue.
On slide 10 is the Alaska Intertie. It is from Willow to Healy, and the beneficiary is Golden Valley. And it also helps improve the railboat reliability. I think it's important to note on this line is on an average, Golden Valley receives a $40 million benefit from being able to buy power in the Anchorage market cheaper than they can produce it in the Fairbanks market. And so I think it's an important comparison when people look at the PCE and say it's a subsidy to rural Alaska for $29 million out of an endowment, when here we look at the investment that was made in that intertie continues to help subsidize the Fairbanks market to close to $40 million a year. It does vary, and these are not our numbers. These are Golden Valley numbers. So it was a very wise investment by the state at the time and continues to be a wise investment.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Mr. Thayer, the $40 million between 2008 and 2018 per kilowatt hour, how much was their power lowered?
Senator Hoffman, I'll get you that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're the Finance Committee, and it would seem that you would have those numbers, so it would be good to, in the future, to have the numbers there so we can get an idea of what our investments are, reducing costs to Alaskans, because that's what we're here for, and when we're dealing with numbers and not knowing what we're reducing our costs, which we are very, very interested in, it would seem that you would have those numbers for us. Thank you.
I can add that it's a ballpark in Fairbanks when we're being able to take full advantage of Bradley Lake. It's lowering our kilowatt hour, I believe, at our homes about 2 to 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour in Fairbanks, but I'm sure Golden Valley's probably listening, and if I've misspoken, the board will send a correction to my office. So on this, go ahead, Senator Stedman, then I've got two questions on this slide.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on this subject, I think the Alaska Energy Authority several years ago put together a little summary page that gave us comparative analysis of energy sources, if it's oil, natural gas, hydro, what have you, so we could do a quick comparison in cost per kilowatt across different energy sources, and that would be handy to have that updated, because clearly the cost of generation is different in different areas of the state and substantially different, and we should keep an eye on that.
Mr. Thayer, could you provide that information to the committee at some point? You got somebody who can work on that and show that cost comparison?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we can.
Thank you very much. Now, seeing no further questions from committee members, I have two questions. So what's the existing estimate to fully upgrade the transmission from Bradley Lake North to fully realize Bradley Lake's full potential? So
Mr. Chair, in working through that, that's approximately $1 billion in different segments. And on my next slide, I break down upgrading from Kenai Peninsula or from Bradley into the Anchorage Bowl. And then we would look north. A lot of our constraining issues is in the Kenai Peninsula. An example is Bradley produces 120 megawatts. Granted, that's not 24/7, 365 days a year because of water flow, but the lines to carry that power is at 75 megawatts. So at certain times of the year, we are definitely constrained and we have line loss. But we are working with all the utilities to identify those, and my next slide breaks that down.
Thank you. And just one more question, and if you don't have the answer, that's fine. I know you've talked about it in here a little bit, but if you could provide us with a back of the envelope cost estimate, not written in stone, but a ballpark on what it would cost to build the road belt intertie. Have you guys thought about that, and have you played with those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, we have looked at it. We've also seen the most recent study that was produced by the Denali Commission, and that's approximately a little over $1 million a mile on the back of the envelope, so it would be approximately $350 million.
Thank you. And for that, Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Curtis, I know it's not directly in your jurisdiction, I guess, but just curious what you're hearing on federal support for natural gas pipeline in Alaska. I'm hearing positive things about that. Is that what you're hearing?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I have not heard anything one way or another. I've talked with Frank Richards several times as we compare notes, but I don't know the latest as far as Washington, D.C. and natural gas pipeline.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, please continue.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I do have
Senator Olson.
Mr. Thayer, as you looked at, you made a comment earlier on that the Bradley leak costs roughly 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour, but natural gas is up at 9. With Bradley Lake being a renewable resource, why is it almost half of what it costs for natural gas, which is a non-renewable resource?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, one of the things is obviously, hydro tends to be, old hydro tends to be the cheapest. And with Bradley being 30 years old, tends to be the cheapest. One thing that we are working with utilities on is ways that we can increase the power out of Bradley Lake. The Battle Creek diversion was one of those. There's a possible another one that we're looking at, diverting some additional water. We also have the ability to add a third generator. It was built for, designed for a third generator, but we only have two operational at the facility. So we're working with utilities on a third one to try to maximize the most amount of power that we can out of Bradley, mainly because it is renewable. And second, it tends to be the cheapest on the railroad and will continue to be.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue on another subject, has to do with the disaster that happened down in Texas. How do we... Do we have redundant alternatives for getting power to different places in case we do have a massive weather phenomenon or some act of God that knocks it out so we don't have people losing all their freezer meat and patients that are at home under care with oxygen generators? Do we have that redundancy here in the state of Alaska for the rail belt?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the short answer is no, we do not. What we do have is we have power generation in Homer, we have it in Anchorage, we have it in the Mat Valley, and there's some in Fairbanks. The transmission line is not a redundant system, and so one of the upgrades that we're looking at doing is to, or the upgrades when you're looking at the system as a whole, is to create that redundancy. And that redundancy is possibly a second line coming off the Kenai Peninsula up into the Matsu Valley. And then another one is looking, obviously, from south, from Anchorage going north to see if we have redundancy within the right-of-way that we currently have. So those are some of the challenges that we have, and those are some of the things that we're looking, that we continue to look at with utilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to admit that I just had a birthday, so my memory isn't quite as good as it used to be. It wasn't Alaska Energy Authority. It was ADA that presented us the data and resources years ago, so I will get this to you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we can send it to the Energy Authority, have them replicate the easy chart for a cost comparison on energy between oil, natural gas, and electric rates around the state. It's a pretty handy little cheat sheet. I do apologize for not remembering the difference between the, or the proper agency.
Thank you for that, Senator Stubman. We'll look forward to getting that out to committee members and to Mr. Thayer. Thank you. No other questions. Mr. Thayer, please continue.
All right. With slide 11, these are some initial projects that the utilities are looking at, and that is the updating of the Sedona Quartz Creek and the substation at approximately $70 million. And then we have Bernice Lake to Beluga. This is Bernice Lake is located on the Kenai Peninsula, taking it through a subsea cable, an HVDC line, to connect over into the Matsu Valley. We're also looking at grid stabilization. And what that is batteries. That is, Homer's looking at placing a battery in their service territory. And, we kind of look to see where in the Anchorage and we can do a battery and possibly help to serve Fairbanks also. So that's what grid stabilization is. And then we have, it says University of Davis Creek. Davis Creek is a little bit right where, Quartz Creek is, that line ends. And you would take that into university, into the substation here in Anchorage. The reason that cost differential is less than the Sedona Quartz Creek is Chugach Electric has already done a lot of upgrades to that line, and it at this point would be cheaper to upgrade that line than it would with Sedona Quartz Creek. And then a small project that we'll be looking at with utilities, and that is the Bradley Lake expansion, and that's to raise the spillway. It'd be about $4 million, but it will increase the amount of water behind the dam, which with the additional Battle Creek, we can utilize that without spilling that water. And that is actually something that we've talked to the utilities, and it might be something that we're going to start this summer, or early next year on completing the project. But that's the initial take on rail belt, upgrades that directly affect, Bradley Lake.
We have three questions on this slide. Senator Stedman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like a brief synopsis on Healy Clean Coal. We've spent a lot of time on that. And if they could help us with that issue, what's the status of that? And also not mentioned here is the potential integration of the coal plant at the university that was just built. I think that feeds into the grid in Fairbanks. So if we could, I didn't see any of that type of stuff in here, if we could get a little synopsis on those projects, helping the grid out.
Through the chair, Senator Simon, I have to reach out to Golden Valley. Those are not in AEA's preview. Those are within the Golden Valley service territory, and those projects rest within them. So I can reach out to Golden Valley for that information.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These look like very exciting projects for those that are going to be benefiting from them. So I wonder if you could give us a timeline of when these would start and when they might end. And again, since we're on the Finance Committee, I wonder if you could give a little synopsis of, if any, on any of these projects, how much the customers are going to see in savings on a kilowatt hour basis, because it's one thing to look at how much we're spending and to evaluate each one of these proposals. It would be interesting to see if one is reducing the cost more than another. So again, being the Finance Committee, we're looking at more, I'm interested in looking at more specifics on each one of these proposals, because to me, reducing energy costs of Alaskans is one of my highest priorities, and I'm sure it is one of the highest priorities of members of this committee. And the governor had said that he was interested in reducing the cost of power to all Alaskans in his State of the State, State of the Union address. So, again, it's one thing to look at the dollars, but we need to see what we're purchasing and how we're reducing the costs, because in your opening statement, the mission said that your mission was to lower costs, and all we're seeing here is how much we're spending, and we're not getting to see exactly how you're accomplishing your mission by lowering costs each one of these slides are a void of that mission statement and how it's affecting the citizens of Alaska.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, one thing to note, and that is next year the Bradley bonds are completely paid off, and through the power sales agreement, there's approximately $12 million that's available. That was at the time 30 years ago was contemplated to go into the rail belt energy plant or into the rail belt energy plan, in which that money will be deposited to do upgrades to the line for as long as there are bonds left on Bradley. And with the Battle Creek, the bonds are about 29 more years. So you have about $12 million for the next 29 years coming in, to hopefully to benefit. If the projects are deemed required project work, then they can be used, that $12 million can be used as required project work to upgrade and do the maintenance on these. And so if you look at bonding, say, at $12 million over the next 29 years, that $12 million coming in, that provides about $250 to $300 million worth of work that could be done on these lines without it affecting the state budget and without it affecting the ratepayers, is because the $12.5 million or $12 million is currently already being paid and has been paid by the ratepayers for the last 30 years. So that's one of the mechanisms that the utilities are looking at and working with AEA on. And so this is our biggest deal was to get the SQ line purchased and to take that lawsuit and take all those issues off the table. And then from that point forward, we can develop a plan. And we're working with utilities, and hopefully in the next month or so, we'll have something to share on each one of these that has also been agreed to by the utilities, which is something I don't think the legislature's seen for a very long time, is AEA and five utilities going hand in hand on what the capital projects might look like. So we are working those, and we can get that information for you.
Follow up.
Thank you. That is all well and good and falls under the mission statement. To lower costs, but I'm trying to get a handle on what's happening in the state, throughout the state of Alaska, and I'm really looking forward to the next slides to see how the authority plans on lowering costs in the highest areas of the state of Alaska, which is rural Alaska, western and northern. So hopefully we can see those slides, and this shows about $400 to $500 million investment. Hopefully we can see similar investments in rural Alaska to lower our costs that are the highest in the state. Thank you.
Senator Steadman and Senator Von Imhoff.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did AEA, were they involved in support of the CAKE little hydro project that was just completed?
Through the chair, Senator Steadman, I need to look at that. I believe we were. We currently have about 30 hydro projects ongoing, or we have some involvement, whether it be financing or through technical assistance, and I just need to check on the CAKE one. That does not ring a bell, but I believe that was on the list, but I can find out real quick for you on that one.
Follow up?
Yeah, if you could, because the concern there is to put in a little hydro in-stream hydro, and the rates actually went up, is my understanding. So if you could take a look at that and help me understand why the rates, if in fact they did go up, which I'm pretty sure they did, after the project, would be helpful.
Going to the chair, I will look into that.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I just have one comment and then a couple questions. So just to address my fellow committee member here about concerns with energy in rural Alaska, it's always been a challenge when we make these long projects to be able to have courage and vision, particularly for the long term. They are costly and they transcend administrations and legislative bodies, and sometimes that's a challenge. There's also environmental concerns. There's cultural concerns. And these projects tend to cross over private and public land, and they take effort and negotiation and time. And I understand that my fellow senator, I understand that he understands that, but sometimes it's much more difficult to get these things to come to fruition. And anything that we can do as a legislature to help that with talking to our communities is always much appreciated. Mr. Thayer, I noticed that you don't have title on this particular slide, in slide 11, particularly in South Central where there are large tides. Is there a reason for that? Or is your organization looking at that type of energy source?
Through the chair, Senator Von Inhoff, we have looked at it. There's been a lot of studies on it. There are challenges with the tide, and also the fact is this is with the utilities. The utilities have looked to hydro and gas generation as opposed to tides. One of the issues that I know that is in Cook Inlet is the silt and the damage to potential tidal projects. There is one that was just announced that they're going to be looking at for the Department of Energy in South Central Alaska, and I just had that information. I just read it yesterday, but there's not any active tidal projects that we are looking at or that I'm aware of any of the utility companies are looking at this time.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Von Emma?
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, please continue, Mr. Thayer.
Thank you. On slide 12 is the Alaska Cargo and Cold Storage. This is where the Alaska Energy Authority was awarded $21 million from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Build Grant Program to help with the construction of a 715,000 square foot facility. The total cost of the facility is $221 million. The $21 million, I do want to kind of highlight, it is the largest award on the West Coast during this last round of build grants, and it was awarded to AEA. And the purpose of that money is to look at renewable energy for that cargo facility and making it an energy efficiency, energy efficient building, and hopefully a showpiece on it. But with that, it will create over 2,000 construction jobs and over 120 full-time jobs. Even though we're 10% of the overall project, the $21 million, I think it's important to note that we kind of stepped outside our normal comfort zone in order to apply for, receive, and hopefully promote this new facility and the jobs that we'll create here in South Central.
Thank you.
Power cost equalization. Thank you. Power cost equalization, as we know, it provides electrical power for rural residential customers and community facilities. And what the way that's designed is we look at Anchorage, Fairbanks, with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, look at Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, determine what their cost is, and then we apply the PCE subsidy or disbursement to those communities for the first 550 kilowatts, so they have the same power as the three largest cities. And then we do that for community buildings, not government buildings, but community buildings. And right now we have 194 eligible communities. That number fluctuates with some communities not participating or not complying with the regulations that establishes the PCE program. And we, and along with the RCA, our goal is to get everybody to 100% so we don't have people going on or off the program, but it averages about 194. And in fiscal year 2020, there was $29.6 million dispersed. This year, we anticipate that to be a little higher due to the fact of the rising cost of energy. One thing that's important to note is this is funded out of an endowment, $1.1 billion endowment set up by the legislature. And the first part of the earnings pays for PCE. The second set, approximately $30 million, goes into the community assistance through the Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And then if there's additional funding available from the earnings, then it goes into the Renewable Energy Fund at about 70% of the earnings.
Thank you. Senator,
the next slide.
Senator Von Imhoff has a question, then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. So I understand that the power cost equalization is used to provide energy assistance to help pay for costs in expensive areas, and I think that's a good thing. But is there a way to use at least some of the PCE money on an annual basis to invest in capital projects that create energy interties that will lower the cost for the whole community in perpetuity.
Through the chair, Senator Van Inhoff, that's a great question. I think a short answer, and I'm not passing the buck, is a policy call of the legislature and the governor. But I do know in the areas of bulk fuel, the legislature and the governor, well, let me just say, bulk fuel upgrades have not been funded. This was in the last 2 years, and we have left close to $35 million of federal dollars on the table by not investing $5 million each year in those projects. And so if there was a funding mechanism that we could use, I think it would be great. One of the things I think is important to note, and of course it was the market, but of a $1 billion fund, the earnings in FY20 was $48 million. If we had invested $10 million last year, we could have parlayed that into about $12.5 million of federal funding. We would have doubled our money for $10 million. But you look at it, the Department of Revenue invested it, and the return was a total of $48 million on over $1 billion. So I would hope that would be under consideration by the legislature to look how we can match federal dollars at this high rate of return.
Follow up.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Thayer, you're absolutely right. I think trying to leverage federal dollars is in the benefit of the state. But you mentioned bulk fuels is definitely one issue, but I'm thinking also along the lines of battery storage and alternative energy setups that I've seen in several parts of the state that are working, if we could just expand that to include more communities.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank Mr. Thayer for that answer. We set the public policy, and we passed legislation several years ago, as Mr. Thayer outlined, that the first call of power cost equalization is for PCE, the second call is for community assistance, and the third call is, if money is left over, for lowering costs or for energy. So that policy is in effect. If there's additional dollars, we can go ahead and look at reducing costs. But my statement is, I know that this is an excellent program to reduce costs. I don't think so. I know so. I represent the communities that have the highest cost of energy in the state. You go to Lyme Village, they pay in excess of $1 a kilowatt. Even after power cost equalization, those people pay well over 50 cents. If people in the rail belt were paying 50 cents, there would be an outcry to try to address that cost and try to lower it. So I know power cost equalization at least helps. It does not do enough, and that is why I'm bringing up the fact that, what are the costs? How much are we investing in the state of Alaska today and trying to assist lowering the cost, which is the primary objective of AEA? And I'm waiting to see what AEA is doing in the next slides to address the cost of the highest cost of power to the citizens in rural Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. And just if I could just make a comment to dovetail onto yours. I mean, you put a little amendment in a gas line bill here several years ago that several of us signed on with you on, and to help with the capital dollars to lower costs of energy in rural Alaska. And I see Curtis, Mr. Thayer, nodding his head. So if we ever get a gas line, there is a good amendment in there. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Moving along.
Okay, thank you. For rural Alaska, our two largest programs is rural power system upgrades. There's 197 communities eligible for upgrades. We're about halfway through those upgrades over a 20-year cycle. For the last 20 years, AEA's been working on that, and we've just at the halfway point. Every time we go into a community, we try to improve the power system's efficiency, safety, and reliability. What you see in the picture in the lower, whether you see the green generator, and in front of it you see a missing generator, that is actually from the village of Chulusac that we were at 2 years ago. They are now operating with two new generators, And then in the green, the generator above it, that green should be a John Deere, but that's a new powerhouse. So we build these new powerhouses in Anchorage and South Central. They're 14 feet by 46. We do offer tours as towards completion. Then they get wrapped up, chink wrapped, and sent out to the particular village, usually in the fall, and installed. It turns to be cheaper to do it this way. And these are not built by AEA. These are built through contracts. We use the private sector to build these powerhouses to specs that are needed in the community. Currently, we have 7 full projects and 16 maintenance improvement. But I think it's important to note there's $327 million of deferred maintenance. If we were to have $327 million, we can immediately upgrade all the powerhouses and make them at this time. But we're constantly getting behind the power curve. Last year, the legislature did award $5 million. We were able to parlay that in to approximately $7 million of federal funding. And we're asking again in our capital appropriations, which is on page 31 that we'll talk about, but we're asking for that same level. When we look at it, we do list the 4 communities on the next slide on 18.
We have a question.
That are the next in line.
We have a question. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thayer, when the state AEA is building out these rural system power upgrades, and with these capital requests and planning, do you make sure that the maintenance and upgoing operation of these powerhouses and generation systems that we're building is there in terms of the structure? Or are we finding that we have to go back and replace these before the useful life is terminated?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, another great question. One of the things is we look at the community's needs as far as their generation, and we've been really working hard to make sure that they have the training and that we stay ahead of the curve. And if we have the time, and I should have included it in the presentation, we actually do, we're doing an inventory and assessment in all the communities with 3D modeling. So we can actually look at a powerhouse and work with the utility worker to identify problems within the powerhouse by zooming in the camera on a valve or something. So we're trying to stay more on top of the maintenance with the rural communities. What we have is of the roughly 200 small communities we have, about 150 have some relationship with a utility, whether it be AVAC or IPAC or some other small utility to help on the maintenance. But there's about 50 small communities in rural Alaska with less than 200 people that don't have to depend, they can't depend on a larger utility. They really depend on AEA. And, you know, even though statute says we may, I think it's safe to say we have assumed the moral obligation to take care of these communities. And so we've identified, especially those 50, roughly 50, to know, you know, where they are with generation. You know, if we're in rural Alaska, we want to stop by those communities. Those are our real priorities, because they don't have a second line of defense like a local utility does. So that is something that we're doing, but our inventory and assessment, 3D modeling is really helping people in rural Alaska and our tax in supporting that need.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Could you go back to page 15? Senator Hoffman and myself both have a question, please.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. When you were talking about the PC program, you listed the 3 categories that the legislature set as public policy on how those dollars get spent. The question that I have is transfers and appropriations of other funds in 19 and 20, and I assume in 21, the legislature proposed and the administration proposed and the legislature agreed on those dollars, but I think that we need to reevaluate the spending to subsidize the administration, since that was never part of the formula on how dollars get spent in the state, to take those from the power cost equalization program to administer when, as Senator Von Imhoff pointed out, those dollars could be better spent. She did not say this, but I say that they could be better spent to address the cost of energy in rural Alaska and try to lower those costs, because those were the three categories, and I think we need to get back to that policy of trying to address those three pots of funds, and if additional dollars are left over, don't try to take them out of a program that's assisting the highest energy costs in the state of Alaska, which are those communities on power cost equalization. So that is my statement, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going on to your upgrades and the idea that some of the rural power system upgrades, is there a difference on the eligibility as to whether they're an AVAC village or if they're a community power house that's there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no, there is not. We look at the needs, the individual needs of the community. One thing I think is important to know with AVAC is they do provide maintenance and O&M to the villages in which they're responsible for. So there's a better lifespan out of those particular generation units.
The other question, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
What kind of upgrades do you have out there for communities like in Unalakleet where they've got a solar power dealer out there that is being able to go ahead and convince many people with the new construction to put solar power in? Are these individuals able to go ahead and tap into this upgrade monies?
Through the chair, no. What individuals do with individual homes, we're responsible for the powerhouses. We also do work within the grids, the microgrids of the community. So if there is renewable to be introduced into the community and into the power grid, that we do work with those communities, but not on a house-by-house basis, not by an individual basis.
And, Mr. Chairman, my last question, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. Do you support net back metering?
Through the chair, I probably shouldn't answer that until there's a lot into netback metering, both urban and rural, and with that comes some challenges within the regulatory commission. So I would probably leave that to the regulatory commission to look at that policy.
Page 18.
All right, page 18 is just simply looking at the four. If we were to be able to receive $5 million worth of funding, we could parlay that into $12.5 million federal funding, and it would identify those first four communities. And then our next RPSU priorities in descending order from Beaver all the way to Gullivan. And these pictures represent, again, in the upper right hand is a new powerhouse, And the larger picture is an example of the of what a current powerhouse or one that needs improvement might look like.
Chairman, I've got a question on
with bulk fuel upgrades.
Hold on. We got a question from Senator Olson and a comment from myself. So, Senator Olson,
Mr. Thayer, on the next rural power systems upgrade, when do you anticipate these to be accomplished? Do you have a timeline for it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson. If we were to receive the $5 million in this capital appropriation, then FY22 we would be looking at the Nelson Lagoon and Rampart and Nikolai and those communities first, and then the next priorities after that. So the $5 million would basically pay for the first four, and depending on budget, it might be able to cover Beaver and Buckland.
Okay, so it's going to be 3 to 5 years from now, is that correct, Mr. Chair?
If, through the chair, if there is funding, the answer is yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And no further questions. Senator Hoffman had a question.
Yes, I was waiting for what was going to be spent proposed by this administration. We've seen close to $500 million in other areas of the state, but why wasn't this $5 million included as a request by the administration to lower costs in rural areas. It seems like, from my viewpoint, if $5 million was requested, it would be a token request. And it would seem that we would be more aggressive to try to meet our mandate of lowering costs to Alaskans throughout the state of Alaska on an equitable basis. And if not on an equitable basis, at least have the Energy Authority concentrate on those areas of the state that have the highest costs, and trying to lower them as well. So, again, that's my statement, but it seems as though if AEA was actually following its mission, we would be at least seeing something in here to lower the cost of Alaskans that have the highest cost of energy in the state.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, for that. Mr. Thayer, just one quick question, not to my fellow co-chairs have a good question to ask committees and ask agencies. What's your absorption rate for projects? How much can you handle in a year?
Mr. Chairman, right now we have the capacity with the ability with the federal funds to staff up. We could probably close to double the number of powerhouses with the proper funding to bring the additional engineer or two on. With keep in mind these are built in by the private sector to our specs and with our management of the project. And so really it's a matter if the funding's available to ramp up with the current contractors that are available to build these powerhouses. And there is capacity, especially in today's economic environment, to build additional powerhouses.
Thank you. And I'll take it offline. There might be some committee members here that might be interested in going to the construction where these power modules are being built. And thank you. Next slide.
Thank you. On page 19 is our bulk fuel upgrades. There's about 400 rural bulk fuel upgrades. Our goal is to get them to be code compliant storage facilities and to prevent spills and contamination. This is a very aging infrastructure, and erosion and failure is a high probability in some of these communities. Some of these bulk fuel stations go back to the 60s and 70s. They have a longer lifespan, but some of them are currently at their lifespan. We currently have 8 active projects and 18 maintenance improvement funding. We've had no funding for this program for the last 2 years. It was included in last year's capital budget and was not, we were unsuccessful in getting the funding. We're asking again for funding for this year. I think it's important that we're leveraging Coast Guard regulatory efforts to capture their assessment and prioritize the projects. The Coast Guard is looking at this very seriously, and we are partnering with them to identify those so we can especially tackle those particular projects. The deferred maintenance on the fuel tanks is $800 million. So between bulk fuel and powerhouses, there's a deferred maintenance of $1.1 billion. I do think that's important to highlight. The capital budget request for this year would do Ewok, Marshall, and Chulak. And then we have our next BFU priority starting at Minto and ending in Tulusac. You can see with one picture, the larger one on slide 19, some of the concerns, some of the valves, and then the newer tanks that is reflected on 19 and especially on 20. One of the biggest areas that we have is these old tanks do not have containment barriers, or more importantly, they've rotted through. In one case, when we were out in Tulusac, it's done by that's been weathered for the last 30 years. And so those are some real challenges that we have. But if we were to receive the $5.5 million in this fiscal year, we anticipate we can parlay that into a $7.5 million grant from the federal government to tackle these projects.
Mr. Thayer.
Bulk fuel takes a little bit longer lead time.
Mr. Thayer, do you have one standard now for containment? Because we've seen 19 and 20 shows two different types of containment, double hole fuel, and then now we've got, looks like a single wall tank, but with containment,
a steel containment. So do you, what's your spec now for containment?
Through the chair, it really depends on the individual community and where it's being placed. And we work with the Coast Guard to work with them to also to be dependent on which they would prefer to see. We prefer to have the large containment, but again, it really depends on the community and where the bulk fuel tanks are located.
And so there's some.
But the majority.
So there is some regulation driving it if you're speaking about the Coast Guard too, correct?
That is, Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Thayer, as you look at slide 20, is this the primary containment or is this a secondary containment that we see in the picture on the left?
You're looking at the, sorry, through the chair, you're looking at the primary containment.
So there's no secondary containment in this picture?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
Okay. On slide 21 and the next couple of slides, there were some questions about cooperative AEA and AFTAC training. We do, when we're not in a COVID world, we do take people to AFTAC from rural Alaska to train them in power plant operators and also bulk fuel operators. And we did training in FY 2020 with 21 different communities. These other slides are just showing our circuit rider and bulk fuel operator training on site. We visited 30 communities with 64 total staff trips. We identified if there were multiple staff trips to a particular community. On slide 23 is our training and technical support. Again, 21 communities, training 32 operators. And we have training and technical support where our circuit rider real-time remote assistance with 85 communities and 452 total responses from the circuit riders. Some of those communities are multiple, in some in double digits. Those obviously are problem communities that we do focus on because their issues aren't just necessarily needing training. It's requiring items with their generation or their bulk fuel facility. On page 25, our Denali Commission, we have partnered with them for the last 23 years. We currently have $33 million in active awards with them. And they will, if we have a state funding, they will match sometimes at a 50-50 or an 80-20 where we pick up the 20 depending on the condition of the community. And we've already anticipate $6 million of additional funding this year alone. So they have been an active party and we've really stepped up our working relationship with them the last 2 or 3 years. As far as grants and loans, we still have the Renewable Energy Fund. The state has invested $268 million in renewable energy by the state. We currently have 99 operational projects and 27 still in development. We recently completed, required by statute, round 13, and it was submitted to the legislature for consideration in 2021. And it was for about approximately $4.7 million worth of projects. We currently have $6.5 million available in the round 13, so we're not asking for new money. By the legislature, we're just asking for basically a reappropriation of some other REF programs that came in under budget or happened to be canceled. And the REF program is scheduled to sunset in June 30th, of 2023. Our power project fund, we currently have about $27 million deployed. We have about $10 million available, and we currently have 7 loans pending. In some action, one I know what we're going to be funding in the next couple of weeks at $1.9 million. I think it's important to note that not only we funded the largest hydro project in Southeast, one of the largest hydro projects in Southeast, that's Halungnai on Prince of Wales Island. We also did the solar farm here, which this picture represents, out in Willow. We've also done we've also financed the Delta Wind Farm outside of Fairbanks. And then we have a community of Galena that is currently looking at finances for some projects in their community. It does require a technical and fiscal viability. And I say seven pending applications. We had one pulled. And our current interest rate is 2.85%. So as grants are not available, communities look at this, and I would say this as a very patient capital And we have nobody in default in the loans that we produced. So I think that's another advantage to the program, obviously.
Mr. Thayer,
when we get to the next
one, has a question.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
I've got two questions. I'd like, Mr. Chairman, if I could, you mentioned a project in Southeast. Could you repeat that? I'm not sure I heard you correctly.
That is Halungnai or Haida Energy on the Prince of Wales Island. That project went, they started flowing water this fall. It's in Copper Bay, Copper Cove, but it's just over from Ketchikan. It's on Prince of Wales Island.
And then on the status of the of your loans, you said there's nobody in default. Is there anybody in arrears, or, the, or has there been any restructuring of the loan terms?
Through the chair, Mr. Stedman, we have nobody in default, and we have nobody in arrears. We have, and we have the ability. We've had a couple of participants who wish to refinance their loans to a new to the new interest rate. In which we have done, some have had originally had their original financing at close to 5% when that was the standard. And as the rates have dropped, currently, like I said, 2.85, we have that ability to let them refinance their loans. And in one case, I don't know if somebody refinancing it, but they're going to be paying down their note by $250,000 on top of that. So, it provides good cash flow. Not only for us, but also for the individual borrowers to have that flexibility.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Thayer, I'm just building upon Senator Stedman's question. So you said they have good cash flow to not only pay down your loans, but to essentially generate for their company. So this, for example, the solar farm and then the others that you mentioned, customers, you're confirming that customers are buying into this grid and it's generating power and lowering the cost of power for those customers. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's two type of loans. We don't necessarily do to individuals. We do to independent power producers, IPP, and into communities. Like, for example, Halungnai or through Haida Energy, that is through a private company and with a local native corporation. And that particular loan was structured in such a way that because of the amount of the loan, it had to be approved by the legislature. But, for example, they have no interest for the first 7 years on that loan. So that is a definite benefit for the consumers. We recently did one with the Baxter Senior Living. They're an independent power producer, with the option of being able to sell back into the grid to Chugach. And so that's a recent loan. The one we're looking at, Galena, is different upgrades they're looking at doing into the community to match some federal grant money that they have to complete a project, and that loan value is about 1.9. The majority of the loans that we have are into local communities or with local governments.
Senator Stedman?
Just a point of clarification. Are you talking about no interest payments for the first several years, or are you talking about interest only?
Through the chair, the loan structure, as it was a $20 million, went through the legislature, and it was deemed to be interest-free for the first 7 years. So I will say that the PPF loan fund is leaving about $600,000 a year on the table for the next 7 years. So there's a loss to the program of $4.2 million. One could look at it that way. But they're currently paying their principal only. Their interest does not kick in for about another 5.5 years.
Thank you. Please continue.
We have the operating and capital budgets on slide 30. It's pretty straightforward. There are no real changes to us. Our travel, we budgeted the same as this year. We're actually down in travel. But the travel that we do to rural Alaska has gone up in cost because of the loss of the regional hub operators and the need to charter aircraft. Our services, which are PCN, our personal services, are paid to ADA, and that remains unchanged, as well as our commodities and any of our capital and grants. We anticipate our expenditure categories to remain roughly the same, with it, except for the addition of PCE. We expect that to go up with the higher fuel costs. As far as funding sources, the one thing is the OMB this year, we were receiving $847,000 UGF from the state, and OMB has redesignated that to come from the PCE endowment. And then we also have we have pretty restricted as far as our power project fund, our renewable energy fund, and also our federal receipts and CIP. So with the exception of PCE, our budget remains unchanged from last year.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We know that power cost equalization, we're going to be spending a little north of $29 million for that program. And we have a community assistance program. So can I request what is the breakdown of those three categories and the other, how much are you proposing to take from the power cost equalization program that is not authorized by statute for administration? And the third request that I have is on unrestricted general funds. For the last 10 years, how much have we been committing state resources to address the mandate of lowering energy costs for all Alaskans? It seems as though we are completely eliminating it now. It's a mandate that I think is one of the highest on the needs list of Alaskans in general, and for us to commit $0 of undesignated general funds, unrestricted general funds, to me seems like we're going in the wrong direction and does not show a commitment by the state of Alaska to reduce the power costs to residents of the state, which is our mission.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Mr. Thayer, you can get the answers to those questions back to the committee, and I'll get them dispersed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and we do have those at our fingertips, since that's been a topic of conversation internally also, so we have that information.
I can imagine that it is, so thank you.
All right, thank you. On page 31 is the capital budget request. We're asking for federal receipt authority of the $21 million to accept the $21 million grant for the air cargo for energy efficiency. We're also asking for federal receipt authority on alternative energy and energy efficiency programs in the tune of $5 million. Again, with our additional relationship and partnership with the Denali Commission, we need to have the ability to accept those additional funds. And so we're asking for $5 million for that. There is no cost to the state in that regard. For bulk fuel upgrades, we're asking for $5.5 million. We believe we can parlay that into federal receipt authority of $7.5 million. For a total of $13 million. And again, this will be the third year in a row that we've asked for this funding, and we have not received it the previous 2 years, and it is getting critical for our bulk fuel upgrades to continue those programs. For our rural power system upgrades, we are doing a state request of $5 million. This is the same as last year, and the state did fund the $5 million request last year. But with that comes federal matching receipt of $12.5 million. For a total of a little over $17 million. So for a $10.5 million investment, we hope to parlay this into a federal receipt authority of $30 million. So I think it's a very good return on the investment. In the supplemental capital budget, there is a request for $200,000 for electrical emergency response. We did not need the funding last year, but this year we do need it. We had 5 electrical emergencies in FY19. In FY20, we had none, but we are having some. We're having some communities that we're watching, and this provide. If the funding is not fully utilized, we carry it forward. Again, it is strictly used for electrical emergencies in rural Alaska. Whether that is sending people out there, that's new parts, that's generators. Work such as that.
We have a question from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year we had a bifurcated legislative term, which ended sometime in late March, which is only a few weeks ago. So we did not spend as much time and attention on many issues. But the one question that I have for you is the funds that were not approved for capital for the programs that you mentioned in general funds. How much did we forego in federal dollars during those last 2 years?
Thank you for that, through the chair. Thank you for that question. In the rural powerhouse, we did not receive funding. We received it last year, but not the two preceding years. So that left about $20 to $25 million of federal funding on the table. And when we look at the power, and when we look at bulk fuel, that left about $15 million about $25 million of rural powerhouses. And with bulk fuel, we've left close to $15 million on the table by not being able to match it. So combined, close to $40 million of federal funding.
$40 million in uncapitalized returns. And what was that match ratio again?
Basically, for $20 million, we would have a 2-to-1.
Thank you. The committee should take a stronger look at this and make sure that we at least maximize dollars on a 2-to-1 basis, so we can at least tip our toe toward reducing energy costs for the citizens of Alaska. That is our mandate. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman, and I have a question.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification. Maybe we can have the staff, with the help of Alaska Energy Authority or vice versa, put together a 5-year synopsis, including FY22, so we can take a good look at a potential lost opportunity with federal funds, because I think it's several places within the budgetary arena the last several years. And as money gets tight, we should be trying to maximize the ability to get federal funds with match, especially if it's 2-to-1 or 10-to-9 or whatever it is.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious if there's other federal funding opportunities that are not listed here that the state might be available, eligible for?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Recently completed, well, the COVID bill package that passed in December of 2020 had the energy bill. Senator Murkowski was able, and Senator Manchin was able, to put their energy bill in that. And we have gone through that, and there are several opportunities for the state to take advantage of some other additional federal funding opportunities or matching. And so we have identified those, and we're working through those case by case to see, since that bill is now, regulations haven't even been promulgated on that particular bill, but we're already researching what the bill holds possibly for Alaska and for AEA.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. And can we expect to have, a supplemental request if there are those opportunities before the budget is completed?
Through the chair, that's a possibility. We're still going through them, but like I said, regulations haven't even been completed on some of these funding opportunities. And so they're not necessarily available to us right away, but we are identifying the ones that we do think we qualify for until the regulations come out, and to make sure. But there are opportunities for state agencies to receive matching or low interest loans to promote projects.
Thank you. Okay, I want to go back to page 31, down to rural power system upgrades. Total funds, if approved, is 17.5. And you go back to page 18, you don't have to turn back there, but we talked about, about the $5 million capital dollars would get us the first 4 power stations. If this budget was approved for the full 17.5, how deep would we get down through the next priorities?
To the chair, I will get back with that, because each community is a little bit different, because we anticipate that an average cost for a powerhouse is about $2.5 million. Some are a little bit more, but I can get you that number of how far we would go with that, how far down we could go.
Please do, and so I can get that back to the committee members, because those are Western Alaska, Lower Kuskokwim area, and it would help out with their power needs. Thank you.
Will do.
Please continue.
Okay, our on page 32 is our unaudited financial highlights. Again, there are no surprises here. One area that we have, the restricted investments, the primary, the $1 billion is the endowment. We have our loans, our capital, and receivable and other assets. The bonds are a little bit less this year because as we pay down the bonds of the Bradley, that is taking that into account, account. Our net position really remains unchanged. What you will see on page 33, though, is when you look through, there's very little changes from our operational revenues and our operational expenses, but you will see a decrease in the net position of $1 billion. That $1 billion is because of the PCE being swept on June 30th, and next year on June, and our next financials, it will reflect come July 1st that $1 billion is back into our financials. So that's why you see it in its asterisk of the the $1 billion.
Okay.
And then the committee had some interest, and that concludes the financials. But a little bit on the Susitna Wantana hydro project. Again, it's out of abeyance. Governor Dunleavy put it out of abeyance. But there has been no significant funding or funding of any in that. There's a lot of additional interest from companies and investing at looking at Susitna Wantana, and we continue to share public available information with those parties. But the dam really remains unchanged in the sense that it can produce up to 600 megawatts. The approximate cost in 2014 dollars is $5.6 billion. We would still need the upgrades to the power lines, which is not associated with there, which is the earlier $1 billion needed to upgrade from, we say Bradley to Fairbanks, but that same type of upgrade would be needed for this power, for Susitna Wantana. We are 2/3 of the way through the licensing. The state has invested $193 million in the licensing. We believe it's less than $100,000 to complete a FERC license. We have all the information and we are prepared to go forward. If the policy call by the governor and the legislature is to move forward. I think I've had conversations with the utilities. They are comfortable in moving forward and looking at Susitna Wantana again. It would take the rail belt to 60% renewable when the project is complete. Right now we're a little less than 30% on renewable as a state, and this would take the state goal to 60%. And we believe the energy savings back in 2014 was over $11 billion. And it had a benefit cost ratio of 2 to 2.39, for energy savings alone. Again, these are on 2014 numbers. So one of the first things that we would need to do is not only continue to work with the utilities, work with the other stakeholders that are affected by Susitna Wantana, and also really look at, to make sure that our benefit costs and our economic impact is numbers still hold true. When this was done in 2014, it figured the cost of power would be roughly 6 cents. But really that was at $140 a barrel oil. So we really need to go back to look at, is it 6 cents? Is it five? Is it seven? Where is it? Because we know what Bradley's at four. We know the utilities are 8.5 to 9. So in order for a project like this to go through, it needs to fall somewhere in under the natural gas, but probably won't be as low as Bradley. But I just wanted to provide this information as it was requested by the committee and on kind of the status of Bradley. Susitna Wantana.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, and I have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think on the projects like this, it's always nice to look at that spin rate at 3% or 3 cents or 4.5 cents or what have you. It'd be nice to look at the spin rate if it was debt-free and then once it's debted, and then also the distribution costs, and take it all the way to the meter, to home, so we can actually get a comparison of what we're looking at. because a ratepayer pays a meter on their house. So we need to factor in all those costs. And it would be nice, as a side note, Mr. Chairman, to take some of our non-renewable energy sources and put it into renewable while we still have a little bit of cash from our non-renewable over the next several decades.
Thank you, Senator Studman. Other comments from committee members? Please continue.
That actually concludes the presentation.
I want to
make sure we covered City of Montana. So.
You mentioned less than $100 million to finish the FERC study. We've invested $190 million to date, and let's just say another $100 million to get the FERC license. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it is.
All right, thank you. Senator Wilson has a question.
No, Mr. Chair, just seeing what we can do to continue on with that project to get it to completion or get it a little bit closer to that FERC license and see why the administration sort of has still put this project on pause and has not moved forward with this continuation of moving forward toward the FERC license.
Thank you for that comment. Mr. Thayer, in closing, thanks for the presentation, but in closing, I would just like to say what you just said a moment ago. If this project was completed and a go, the state would be 60% renewable. 60% renewable. I would think, because you eat, breathe, and sleep this world every day, this would be a project that that you folks are really focused on, and with the new administration, where they're going with energy, to me, this looks like it's on paper, it's a winner. So with that being said,
Mr. Chairman, I have one second.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your last page, which is very exciting, which states that AEA provides energy solutions to meet the unique needs and opportunities of Alaska's rural and urban communities. What in your budget meets the energy solutions in rural Alaska in your viewpoint?
Aside from PCE. Thank you for that question. I think that there's a couple of areas. Obviously, we have pushed really hard on trying to work with powerhouses and bulk fuel, not only upgrading them, but getting the 3D modeling and working with the individual communities and understanding exactly what those issues are. I think in as far as the urban areas, I think that the purchase of the SSQ line and working with utilities, like I said, we don't have electrical utility wars anymore. We're working together to try to resolve a lot of those issues. I think a lot of that goes to the individual general managers and a different perspective we've taken here at AEA as far as our role and our participation in trying to lower those costs. Again, I mentioned that we stepped outside of our box and went for $21 million of federal funding. We have a skill set, we have the specialty to do it, and now we can create 2,000 construction jobs starting next summer in Anchorage because of our participation. So I think in rural Alaska, we're really trying to turn the corner and raising the issue of the $1.1 billion deferred maintenance. That number had not been used before, but when we've calculated it, it's something that I wanted to get very passionate to get out there for the policymakers of the state and for the administration to understand exactly where we're lacking in rural Alaska. So I think across the board, we're a small agency, but I think we're trying to make a big difference, and we have a good team trying to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Tomorrow, this will conclude today's meeting. Our next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday, March 11th, 2021 at 9 a.m. On the agenda, Senate Bill 55 by the governor relating to employer contributions to PERS and the public employees retirement system. We will then recess after we hear that. We'll recess to 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. And we will then take up the governor's executive order 119 to split the Departments of Health and Social Services into the two departments. And we will have that conversation tomorrow. That's as of right now. So with that being said, thanks for everybody for attending today. I think this energy is a great conversation. And we are gaveled out right on the money, 10:30.